Well, good morning. Calling to order this meeting of the House Committee on Children and Families Finance and Policy. Welcome to all. Really excited to have our meeting today to get to receive a presentation of the Wells Flanagan administration's budget proposals in our area. We're going to start as we almost always do. We didn't do this last time, but start with the call of the roll. So, Ms. Kahn, if you could please do that.
Chair Pinto.
Present.
Vice Chair Keeler.
Present.
Lee Daniels.
Present.
Representative Bliss.
Present.
Representative Coulter.
Present.
Representative Davis.
Present.
Representative Hansen.
Present.
Representative Hemmingson-Yeager.
Present.
Representative Hicks.
Present.
Representative Hudson.
Present.
Representative Katiza-Watun.
Present.
Representative Lee.
Present.
Representative Nelson.
Present.
Representative Pérez Vega.
Present.
Representative Zalesnikar.
Present.
We have a quorum.
We do. We have a full house here, which is great. Thanks, members. So we have four sets of minutes to approve, and we're kind of playing a bit of catch up there. And what I'm going to do is move that to the end of the agenda, given our guests. But I'm going to rely on Ms. Colbert and Ms. Kahn to help remind me. Anybody else can too. Make sure that we do get those minutes approved before the end of the meeting. We're going to be receiving the presentation of the administration's budget proposals, which I'll just note at the outset, I find really exciting to help make Minnesota a state where all kids have the chance to thrive and receive a great start. So I'm really excited about this. I'll just see if there's any questions regarding process or agenda or anything from anybody, and not seeing anything. So I think our first guest is Assistant Commissioner Erin Bailey, Director of the Minnesota Children's Cabinet. As she comes up, I'll just thank her, as I want to thank every single person to testify today for your incredible effort. And I see she's joined by Stephanie Hoganson from the Children's Cabinet as well. So, Commissioner, if you can identify yourself. And members, a reminder, you've got the presentation in your packet. And for those watching online, a reminder, we have a committee website, and you'll have all the packet, all the materials on that website as well. So, Commissioner, please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Erin Bailey, and I have the privilege of serving as Assistant Commissioner at Minnesota Management and Budget and the Executive Director of Minnesota's Children's Cabinet. The Children's Cabinet housed within Minnesota Management and Budget refers to the convening of the state's commissioners around children and youth. Our team leading this interagency effort has been charged by the governor and lieutenant governor with helping make Minnesota the best state for each and every child to grow up. I'm pleased to be here with my colleagues from the Department of Education and the Department of Human Services to provide an overview of the governor's historic transformational budget for children and families. I'm going to start this presentation with a high-level overview of the Governor and Lieutenant Governor's Children, Families, and Education budget, which is developed through a cross-agency process to center children and families and to coordinate and align priorities. The goal is to build packages and strategies that advance efforts to address the top priorities we hear from Minnesota families, working together and going out to get new ideas and also building on the agency process. We hope that many of the leaders here today see their fingerprints on the budget proposals and work you will hear more about today. Many of the governor's children's and families budget proposals are in your committee's jurisdiction, and details of those priorities will be shared by my colleagues, Commissioner Jody Harpstead, Assistant Commissioner Tiki Brown at the Department of Human Services, and Commissioner Willie Jett and Assistant Commissioner Bobby Burnham at the Department of Education. Since we know children and family issues don't fall clearly in one agency or one legislative committee, I will provide a summary of the broader package and goals. As an administration, we want to thank you, Chair Pinto, and the members of your committee for this opportunity here today.
And Commissioner, just before you move on, I'm just going to note for folks, my plan is to have, if there are clarifying questions in the course of the presentations, we'll have folks ask them. But otherwise, my plan is to leave an ample amount of time at the end of the presentations for sort of broader questions and discussion, et cetera. We'll have the folks with some detailed knowledge be available for that. So just to kind of to set the stage. So please carry on.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Mr. Chair. First, as a grounding in needs we're trying to address, I want to take a moment to share some key data points about Minnesota's children. There are about 1.3 million children in the state of Minnesota. More than one-third are Black, Indigenous, or children of color, and about 350,000, or one in four, live in lower-income households. 98% of children in low-income households have at least one adult who, in the past year, and 76% under six, have all available parents in the workforce. For working families, childcare costs are out of reach at 33% of income for lower-income households. Minnesota's child population will continue to become more racially diverse because of the state's age-race structure. And digging into these numbers, we know that 14% of our K-12 students, for instance, live in a household with all foreign-born parents. So we must create efforts that are designed to meet their needs socially, culturally, individually, and support access and opportunity for each and every child. Economic stability, basic needs, and access to opportunity are key to children reaching their full potential. And that's why the governor's budget puts families first, lowering their taxes, supporting their basic needs, investing in public education, communities, and families, and coordinating how government supports their family. The governor has proposed investing more than $12 billion over 4 years in proposals that addressed top needs identified. A hallmark of this budget is a nation-leading tax credit for children and families that would decrease child poverty in the state by 25% and is the second largest proposal in the governor's budget in entirety. I will share more about this in a few minutes. The priority areas included in the children and families budget include a package around beginning with birth, academic supports, workforce and pipelines, child care and early learning, health, including specifically student mental health, family, youth, and community supports, and I'll provide a brief overview of some of these packages. The governor's budget makes childcare more affordable with the goal of moving towards a 7% family affordability standard. It's a federal standard and the affordability standard that will be included in the Great Start Task Force recommendation reports, which are due to you February 1st. The budget does this primarily in the following proposals that you'll hear more about today. Improving the child care assistance program by setting rates to the 75th percentile, permanently reprioritizing the wait list, providing eligibility for foster and kinship families, and infusing additional resources into BSF, serving 1,800 additional families, including more than 3,600 children each year. It also invests $90 million per year, more than doubling the base for early learning scholarships and prioritizing 0-3, serving 9,000 children each year.
Commissioner, I'm just going to stop you. On the prior bullet, there's the letters BSF, and I know for many of our folks, they're still pretty new to this area. That's the basic sliding fee portion of the Child Care Assistance Program, CCAP. So just want to dispel that. So please continue on. No problem.
Creating a mixed delivery pre-K program to serve nearly 25,000 four-year-olds in school-based, licensed center, and family child care providers and Head Start settings by 2027. The proposal also uses the tax code to support affordability by creating a significant expansion to the Minnesota Child and Dependent Care Credit that will mean up to $8,000 towards child care for a family of four with two children under five with qualifying child care expenses. The phase-out begins at $200,000, $100,000 for single filers, and is estimated to reach 157,600 households. The strategy here is a holistic package that makes meaningful investments in programs serving our lowest-income Minnesotans who need access to child care upfront to be able to go to work or to school and to support their family, and provides economic relief reaching into the middle class. The budget also has sustainable investments to recruit and retain a highly qualified workforce and expand access in underserved communities, establishing retention payments for child care programs to support increased compensation for workers as a result of recruitment, training, and support for providers starting or operating child care businesses. DHS will speak more to this proposal. And it invests in the DEED Child Care Economic Development Grants and to establish a DEED Office of Child Care and Community Partnerships to create a central force for efforts to advance child care as an economic and workforce development issue across our state. I want to take a moment before I move on to the next package to thank each and every child care provider and early learning educator across our state. I think I speak for everyone in this room when I say we are grateful for the work you do. You are making a difference. This administration knows that we must continue to prioritize ongoing support to meet the needs that you are facing. This next proposal, the budget proposal also recognizes the increased need for children's mental health services and supports with a more than $280 million over 4 year investment in children's mental health supports. This includes school-based supports to more acute and crisis services. It includes the school-linked behavioral health and school support personnel package. The package also prioritizes older youth with a focus on systems-involved youth and prevention. There's a $130 million package around out-of-school time funding, supporting youth leadership, youth violence intervention and prevention grants, funding for financial assistance and local coordination of services for youth exiting the foster care system, supporting districts in alternatives to exclusionary discipline and mental health and juvenile justice systems. I should say youth justice systems. The governor's budget also prioritizes putting cash in families' pockets. The governor's check proposal includes a $200 plus-up for each dependent up to three children. I spoke briefly about the child tax credit. This proposal would establish a refundable state tax credit that would be $1,000 per child up to the age of 18, with a maximum credit of $3,000, beginning phase out at $50,000. The credit is estimated to reduce child poverty in Minnesota by nearly 25%, and it is truly a transformational opportunity, an opportunity to help support families with young children. Decreasing child poverty is tied to better birth outcomes, higher graduation rates, and generational financial independence and stability. The budget also responds to families asking for increased coordination and services, some key proposals supporting family opportunity, coordination, and removing barriers for youth. This includes funding community-based coordination services, such as community resource centers, full-service community schools, an expansion on school-based health centers, and the Help Me Connect model housed at MDH. Expanded medical assistance coverage for children, including continuous coverage for children under the age of six. Paid family medical leave and earned sick time, as well as family preservation, family income, and basic needs supports, which DHS will touch on in more detail later. Lastly, the budget includes a proposal related to governance. After 4 years of this administration focusing on children and learning from governance reports, agency staff, service providers, many of you in the legislature, and most importantly, families, the governor and lieutenant governor have come to the conclusion that it is time for Minnesota to more formally consider a proposal to create an agency that centers specifically on children. As such, the governor and lieutenant governor's budget proposed to create such an agency, a Department of Children, Youth, and Families, that reimagines our state government structures to elevate children, youth, and family priorities and funding needs by providing focused leadership in our executive branch and with the legislature. The focus of this new agency is broader than early childhood. Listening to families and communities that coordinate support for children, youth, and families is necessary to reaching our equity and opportunity gap goals. The core agency would include most of Children and Family Services at the Department of Human Services, the child-related elements at the DHS's Office of Inspector General, early learning programs from the Department of Education, and proposed older youth programs, as well as some smaller components from the Department of Health, as well as the Department of Public Safety. With greater coordination and efficiencies, we can better serve children and families. We believe it is important to create a transition process for this new agency to take our time and to do this right. This will take time and dedicated capacity and a runway to succeed. The proposal asks for the authority and resources to support the transition with a 2-year process to plan and transition to the new agency. Before us is an incredible opportunity, a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to invest in our children and families, update our state programs to better meet and respond to current needs, and to center children and families in our state government. Before I close, I would like to take this opportunity to thank each and every state employee who had their hands on building this budget. From the data analysis on potential impact to the engagement with Minnesotans over many years, thank you for the long hours and commitment to creating a roadmap of opportunity. I'm eager to work with you to pass this budget and proud to work alongside the leaders of our state agencies who will provide further details on the package. Mr. Chair, I apologize that I will need to leave shortly to present in another committee, but my colleagues from the Department of Human Services and Department of Education, members of the Children's Cabinet, agencies, as well as my colleague Stephanie Hoganson from my team, are here for questions and always feel free to reach out. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. With your permission, I will turn it over to Commissioner Harpston.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner Bailey. There is a question, Representative Zelesnikar. We're just going to check that out real quick. Representative Zelesnikar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. I'm thrilled that we're going to have child care opportunities. I mean, child care is a cornerstone for children's development and also for the workforce, and that's something I'm excited to hear your presentation. I just have a question on, and I'm assuming this happens, so I'm sorry for a question, because this is new to me, but do we have a system between the departments, the Department of Revenue, and then the department that you represent to track to make sure that the payroll dates match the childcare funding dates. So when we're funding childcare, is there ways to match that? Because I'm just wondering how that process works.
You know, Representative Zelesnikar, I think what I'd like to do, because I don't know if that falls on the clarifying question about the presentations. I think what I'd like to do, if it's okay, is let's sort of save that till later. I will have folks who are sort of hearing that question. We'll come back to it and then be able to discuss it in our broader discussion, if that's okay. I guess to the extent it relates to the presentation, but I want to keep things right now to clarifying questions about what each of these folks has presented, but then we'll have a broader discussion, if that's okay with you. So, but for our folks, you'll be aware of what Representative Zelesnikar was asking. Thank you.
Yes.
And I do know the Assistant Commissioner also does need to run the State Government Finance. With that, we'll have you do that. I know Ms. Hoganson, though, sitting next to you, has deep expertise and will be here as well. And thank you so much, Assistant Commissioner, for your work.
Thank you, Mr.
It's
Chair.
A lot has gone into this. I know a lot has you personally put a lot into it. So thank you so much. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very much,
good
Chair.
Stuff. And so we'll have Commissioner Harpstead make her way up. As she does, I'll just note for members and members of the public that there are budget pages that underlie this is a broad presentation. There are budget pages that describe the details. I know that Mr. Berg sent out the pages for the human services portion of our jurisdiction. And I'm not sure if they included, or Ms. Beckel, if they included the education part of our, maybe, yeah, no, they have not. So we're still awaiting those. Okay, yeah, so those will be sent to us, but the human services part, which is the bulk of our jurisdiction, we have budget pages that were sent to members, and I believe they've been posted as well on our committee website. Yep, so for everybody, you can get, I think it's multiple hundreds of pages describing in great detail all this, so many of your questions answered there. Commissioner Harpstead, so glad to have you with us. Welcome. And please identify yourself and proceed with your presentation.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. For the record, Jody Harpstead, the Commissioner of the Department of Human Services. Before I jump into the DHS portion of the budget, I just wanted to comment on one of the things that Assistant Commissioner Bailey just presented, the possibility of a new agency for children, youth, and families. The Governor, Lieutenant Governor, and I have been talking since I started with the administration 3 years ago about the best way to structure the Department of Human Services, which is a very big agency, as you know. The direct care and treatment separation is our cleanest, clearest split, our very large health care system from the rest of DHS, which does policy formation, funding, and regulation. I've also known since I joined the administration that the governor and lieutenant governor were wondering if they would have the opportunity to create a separate agency for children, youth, and families, as 22 other states have done, and to support their own best top priority of Minnesota as the best place for children to grow up. Of course, COVID intervened, but with the second term, they've had the opportunity now to bring both of these proposals forward, and it's a strong decision. I had testified last year about an early learning agency as too tiny, having to create all the administration around it to support the small piece of work that was contemplating coming together. This idea is bigger and stronger, and we are all in working to help create this agency and imagine its possibilities, and I just wanted you to know that to catch us up from prior testimony last year.
Thank you so much, Mr. And as somebody who was definitely pushing for that agency, I'm so excited to see this one, and thank you for your and for all of your work.
Thank you.
Your comments. Thank you. Yeah, so please proceed.
So the mission of the Department of Human Services is that working with many others, we help people meet their basic needs so they can live in dignity and achieve their highest potential. The pillars of the budget package of the department are to make Minnesota the best place for children, including Black, Brown, and Indigenous children, to grow up, remaining one of the top five states in the nation for older adults and people with disabilities to live in as well, transform the health and human services system so it simply works better for people, take a stand for racial justice, gender justice, housing justice, and health justice, along with our partners in the Interagency Council for Homelessness, and increase our operational effectiveness and facilitate the co-creation of solutions with partners. Our portion of the children and families budget looks like this, 1.6, actually closer to $7 billion for children and family services, $148 million for housing and homelessness, especially shelter and housing stability, and then $41 million in what we call service delivery transformation, which we used to call IT, but you'll hear a little bit in a few minutes about why we now call it service delivery transformation, for a total of $1.9 billion in 19 proposals. And I'm going to turn it right over to our Assistant Commissioner, Tiki Brown, for children and families to begin to present the actual proposals.
Well, Commissioner, that sounds great, and thank you so much for your work. And I should note, this is just one small part of all you're responsible for, and thank you so much for everything that you do.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. And Assistant Commissioner Brown, it's so nice to have you with us and giving us then the more of the details. So please identify yourself as you once you get settled in and proceed.
All right, thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tiki Brown. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Children and Family Services at the Department of Human Services. Thank you for the opportunity to share the governor's recommendations related to children and families. The Children and Family Services Administration, or CFS, supports families, helps keep children safe, and helps build stable, thriving families and communities. Through its numerous programs, Children and Family Services and partners help support approximately 500,000 people in Minnesota. You can see on the slide and in your documents the various programs and services that are distributed out of the Children and Family Services. And in the interest of time, I will move directly over to our proposals.
Yeah, Commissioner, though, I'll note this is a nice overview for members, too, just a reminder of our committee's responsibilities as well. So this is really helpful.
Good. Yeah, thank you. Okay, so the governor's package to support the childcare industry and The governor's package supports the childcare industry and aims to address systemic access and workforce issues, workforce needs that have long been unresolved. To create the childcare system our state's economy and children and families need, we must support our childcare heroes, often called the workforce behind the workforce. The first proposal I would like to share with you is called Supporting the Childcare Industry and Workforce. This recommendation includes permanent funding to strengthen the childcare sector and workforce through a childcare retention program and other industry supports. This recommendation includes retention payments to childcare programs to help ensure childcare capacity is consistently available to families throughout Minnesota. These payments will include funding for childcare programs to increase wages and benefits for early educators. It includes funding to provide ongoing training, recruitment, and higher education scholarships to increase the number of qualified early educators to work in childcare programs and address the workforce shortage. It also includes grants and supports to equip providers with information and tools to start up and effectively operate childcare businesses.
And I'll note, Commissioner, that for members, there's a page reference, page 92. That's a reference to the page number in the, that those budget pages that we were sent. And so you have that electronically. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The next slide. The governor's children and families package also includes a number of recommendations that increase access to affordable child care through a mixed delivery system that aims to meet various family needs. Cross-agency coordination was essential to in creating this package. In addition to the dependent care credit expansion, the D grants and office that Assistant Commissioner Bailey mentioned, and proposals that the Department of Education will speak to later this morning, the governor is proposing supporting the child care industry and access through investments in the Child Care Assistance Program, or CCAP. First, we recommend increasing CCAP rates to the 75th percentile and updating rates every 3 years based on the most recent market rate survey. This change will encourage more providers to accept CCAP and increase childcare options for low-income families. It also will ensure that DHS is compliant with federal requirements to update the maximum rate every 3 years. The governor also recommends permanently reprioritizing the basic sliding fee childcare assistance waiting list, which would allow us to serve additional families and move families off of waiting lists more quickly. The basic sliding fee waiting list priority order was temporarily reprioritized during the 2021 legislative session and is currently set to revert back to the previous prioritization order after May 31st of 2024. This proposal makes these changes permanent. The temporary reprioritization that is currently in place has allowed families exiting MFIB to, or the Minnesota Family Investment Program, to continue receiving child care so that other families on the wait list can access basic sliding fee child care. Permanent reprioritization would extend this good result. We would also like to expand the definition of family under CCAP, or the Child Care Assistance Program, to include foster care families, relative custodians, successor custodians, and guardians. This change would allow these families to access CCAP to receive increased financial support for child care. And finally, on this slide, the governor proposes increasing funding to the basic sliding fee child care assistance program by $15 million each year. These ongoing additional funds will help local agencies increase the number of families served by CCAP and reduce the existing basic sliding fee waiting list. The next set of proposals include recommendations that seek to remove administrative barriers for child care providers while also enhancing program integrity and oversight of licensed programs. Op 51 is a proposal intended to address the gap in DHS's authority to root out bad actors under current law. Under current law, DHS has the authority to disqualify a provider who has been disqualified from a program administered by DHS from receiving other DHS grant contracts or program funding. However, DHS does not have the authority to disqualify a provider from another state agency or federal agency. So under this proposal, DHS would have the authority to disqualify a provider from receiving funding through any grant contract or program administered by DHS when that provider has been disqualified from receiving funds administered by another Minnesota state or federal agency. Op 76 is moving into our licensing area. This proposal addresses the fact that licensed programs and investigations have increased significantly while staffing has failed to keep pace with this growth. For example, while the number of foster care applications and licenses have grown significantly in recent years, there has not been a corresponding increase in the number of employees doing this work. Our Central Intake and Maltreatment Investigations Unit is also experiencing significant increase in the number of reports received. And finally, the number of licensed child care centers has grown steadily since 2014, and our current child care licensing staff composition is no longer sufficient to meet this growth. Op 79 is a proposal that improves the licensing experience specifically under family child care providers. Under current rule and statute, licensed family care providers are typically given two-year licenses. This proposal would implement a continuous license process or a license that automatically renews for family child care license holders. This proposal seeks one-time funding to cover family child care initial application and annual licensing fees for a two-year period of time. This will give counties and license holders time to adjust to this new cycle. CF46 is a proposal that, in addition to reducing licensing burdens, we would also like to improve the experience for child care providers registering for the CCAP program. This proposal would move the CCAP provider registration, renewal, and registration closure process from CCAP agencies to the Department of Human Services. Providers would no longer need to register with multiple agencies at multiple times in a registration period. It makes the registration process easier, which may result in more providers registering to care for children receiving CCAP, and it reduces the administrative burden for both child care providers, county, and tribal CCAP agencies. Our next slide. The governor's budget for Children and Family Services includes a number of recommendations that support economic stability for Minnesota families. As Commissioner Bailey mentioned, when we increase family outcome, we improve child outcomes. The child tax credit is a historic step forward that will significantly reduce child poverty in our state and support working families. Additional governor budget proposals include supporting working Minnesotans, CF68. This proposal makes the Minnesota Family Investment Program, MFIB, and the General Assistance Program more effective at supporting economic stability for low-wage workers and helps simplify program administration. This proposal builds on the mission of supporting work and economic stability for people receiving public assistance by setting benefit levels for 6 months rather than month to month. which will result in more income stability for low-income families who turn to these programs for help. This program will closely align Minnesota's policies for cash assistance programs with the Federal Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. This proposal builds on legislation that was enacted in 24 and 2015 that was designed to address uniformity across multiple programs. And it eliminates the administratively costly and time-consuming process of redetermining benefits each month for frontline county and tribal workers. CF63 is a proposal that supports food security among tribal nations, increases base funding for Minnesota Food Shelf Program, provides additional outreach for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, and invests in emergency food distribution facilities across the state. One specific portion of this proposal is a $19 million one-time capital portion that would allow emergency food distribution facilities to renovate, upgrade, improve facility safety, and address ongoing wear and tear to our emergency safety system, emergency food system. And finally, this proposal includes $6 million per biennium to support additional outreach and application assistance for Minnesotans who may be eligible for SNAP. CF64 is building assets for Minnesota families. This proposal increases the base funding for the Family Assets for Independence in Minnesota program, otherwise known as FAME. This allows tribal nations and nonprofits to administer the program with the goal to reach more diverse participants and allows participants to contribute to emergency savings accounts or college savings accounts for their children. FAME combines matched savings accounts with personal financial education, asset-specific training, and ongoing coaching to help working families acquire assets, improve their financial capabilities, and increase their economic security. For our next proposals addressing tribal child welfare, important context specific to child welfare is that since 1801 and through 1969, the U.S. government sponsored and operated Indian boarding schools. And during that time, tens of thousands of children were forcibly removed from their families. And from that history, the federal government enacted the Indian Child Welfare Act, or ICWA, in 1978. ICWA is designed to protect the best interests of American Indian children. And so as we look at our tribal welfare proposals before you, we're working to fulfill that policy and ensuring that the rights of Native children and their families are protected. Preserving American Indian Families, or CF57, is proposing expanding the American Indian Wellbeing Unit at DHS. This would develop and expand culturally based prevention services for American Indian children and their families. It will allow us to respond in a timely way to reports of noncompliance with state and federal laws governing child welfare. And it will provide dedicated DHS staff to work on updates to the tribal-state agreement. We would also like to increase funding for Indian child welfare grants to Indian tribes, Indian organizations, and tribal social service agency programs. We additionally would like to continue supporting our efforts for Minnesota's initiative tribes and other tribal child welfare agencies, including providing funding to support the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe in its ongoing efforts to join Minnesota's American Indian Child Welfare Initiative, and providing funding for existing initiative tribes of White Earth Nation, Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe, and Red Lake Nation to respond to their budgetary needs. One final note on this slide. In November, the Supreme Court of the United States heard a challenge to ICWA, which is grounded in the sovereignty of tribal governments. The Department of Human Services does not have a proposal this session, but we have been participating in work groups that will introduce legislation to enshrine ICWA requirements into the Minnesota Indian Family Preservation Act. And doing so will ensure that ICWA remains in place, which is important legislation for Indian children, families, and tribes that reside in Minnesota. On the next slide, this proposal, CF60, provides new or increased funding for programs aimed at supporting older youth and youth exiting out of foster care. We have new programs that will, We have expansion of existing programs that will allow us for the ability to reach thousands of eligible youth exiting out of foster care. We have a new program that will allow for an additional year of financial support to youth transitioning out of extended foster care. We have a program that specifically targets youth ages 15 to 17 without parent or legal guardians that are experiencing homelessness. We propose providing grants to counties and tribes to help reduce their caseloads for staff that are working with youth in extended foster care, and then are also looking to support county and tribal permanency efforts for youth age 6 to 21. Finally, this proposal funds a research and engagement project to consider the best method for preserving federal payments, made on behalf of children in foster care to meet the best interests of eligible children. Families are asking for more coordinated services and seamless access to supports. The Governor's Children and Families Package responds to this need by supporting several community-based service models, including full-service school, community schools at the Department of Education and school-based health centers at the Department of Health. DHS proposes establishing a network of community resource centers with physical and virtual access points for families to support relationship-based, culturally appropriate programs, service navigation, and case management. Community resource center grants will be available to a broad array of entities, including but not limited to community-based organizations, local governments, tribal nations, counties, school districts, community action agencies, and collaboratives, including one or more of the mentioned entities. In the next slide, CF58 is a proposal that supports the third phase of the Family First Prevention Services Act, or Family First. This funding is to expand initial prevention services, support promising practices, and plan for additional services that focus on prevention and family preservation efforts that will be eligible for federal Title IV-E reimbursement. It also includes funding for grants to local social service agencies to support infrastructure, staffing, and concrete assistance for families in the areas of prevention. Our next slide is CF59. This proposal establishes a non-caregiver sex trafficking assessment track to remove the need for contact between an alleged non-caregiver sex trafficker and the local child welfare agency. Through this new track, child welfare agencies would perform an assessment of child safety, risk of subsequent child maltreatment, and assess the strengths and needs of the child and the family. CF62 is moving us into the housing space, where we have a number of recommendations that seek to address homelessness in our state. Minnesota counted nearly 8,000 people experiencing homelessness in one night during January of 2022, our point in time count. Of those, approximately 22% were staying outside. Families and children made up 37% of those counted. The governor's budget proposes increasing base funding for the Emergency Services Program, Transitional Housing Program, Homeless Youth Act, and Safe Harbor, Shelter, and Housing. Investments in these critical programs will reduce financial strain on emergency shelters and improve services for people experiencing homelessness across the state. And these investments will also allow providers to increase wages, hire and retain qualified employees for this important and difficult work. Finally, this is my last slide here. I would like to briefly touch on a few proposals that seek to improve our technology systems at the department, both in addressing our aging legacy IT systems and to prepare for new platforms that serve people in a more efficient, person-centered, and holistic way. CF41, Integrated Services for Children and Families. We need to make critical investments in stabilizing our legacy systems for our child support, child welfare, and economic support information systems. We will do this by addressing a backlog of fixes and inefficiencies that have created errors and manual workarounds for our frontline county and tribal workers. We propose funding to modernize the information technology used for child support enforcement and funding to update the Social Services Information System, or SSIS, to meet federal data sharing and integration requirements. This proposal increases investments that will improve communications with program participants in a more modern way, such as using secure email, texting, chat, and client portals. Finally, Op 72 is our licensing system transformation. We would also like to improve the experience for licensed providers by establishing a unified provider licensing and reporting hub. In October of 2022, DHS began implementing an electronic system for the licensing and registration of licensed and certified child care programs in Minnesota. This proposal would build upon that existing work and provide funding to sustain ongoing maintenance of operations while expanding the hub to all human service license types in both state and county levels. The licensing hub would allow prospective DHS license providers to apply for a license in multiple languages electronically through the hub. It will allow the licensing process to occur in a much more transparent fashion. It will support providers through focused training materials in multiple languages. And then for existing licensed providers, it will maintain our licensing information electronically, communicate, allow for more effective communication, and centralize the licensing and reporting into one location, subtracting the number of places and processes that a provider must use to comply with reporting requirements. And that concludes my portion.
Well, there's a lot there because there's a lot of needs for kids and families, and thank you so much. And that was really well put together. Thank you to the folks who helped put that together. Really, really good. Thank you so much. We'll save broader questions till later. So we'll have Commissioner Jett, if the commissioner is available, make his way up. And please make your way on up. Yeah. And as the commissioner does, I'll just note, members, we noticed a typo in the minutes for January 12th. So I'm going to ask the pages to distribute. We've got a replacement copy, just a bill number that was in error. And so we'll get that out, and Ms. Khan can have that distributed. So she won't be surprised when that's handed out to you. Members, a reminder, our committee jurisdiction includes Children and Family Services and DHS, and also the early learning programs in MDE. And really glad to be joined by the new commissioner of the Department of Education, Commissioner Jett. Identify yourself, introduce yourself, and then proceed with your presentation.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Willie Jett, and I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to be here today to introduce myself for the first time to this committee as the new Commissioner of Education for the state of Minnesota. I'd like to take just a moment to tell you a little bit about myself before Assistant Commissioner Burnham shares details of the education components of the Governor and Lieutenant Governor's budget related to early learning. So, education is at the core of who I am. I come from a family of educators. I was born and raised in Minnesota, and I'm a product of the Osceola schools. After receiving my higher education in Maryland, Illinois, New York, and Pennsylvania, I came back, as many of us do, to be with my family and to answer my calling in education. I taught and coached basketball in several districts, including Anoka-Hennepin, Osceola, and Minneapolis. After earning my administrative licensure through the University of Minnesota, I served as an assistant principal in Osceola, principal in Hopkins, assistant superintendent at St. Paul Public Schools, and most recently as superintendent of the St. Cloud Public Schools for the last 9 years. My background, education, and professional experience have all led me to this role, to this moment, to serve as the Commissioner of Education. I understand the unique challenges facing communities in the metro and communities in greater Minnesota. I have the perspective of a student, a parent, a teacher, a coach, and an administrator. I know firsthand the complexities of diversity in our schools. So I come here today with the perspective of a lifetime of work in education invested in our Minnesota children. My commitment is to work with each and every one of you to provide opportunities for all of our students, regardless of race or zip code, so that they can reach their full potential. This is why I'm excited to be here with you to highlight pieces of Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan's One Minnesota budget. Bless you, whoever that was. The budget invests in the things that matter most to Minnesotans. The top of that list is our children and families, the exact reason that you're here. The goal is to make Minnesota the best state for kids to grow up. In order to achieve that goal, we need to invest in education and invest in it early. No one knows more than members of this committee that setting our students up for success starts early. You've heard a breadth of research in committee that shows how critically important the early years are to setting a child up for positive educational, social, emotional, and behavior outcomes later. The One Minnesota budget makes a historic $6.3 billion investment in education, the largest in state history. Part of this includes nearly $500 million for a mixed delivery pre-kindergarten program that will serve an estimated 25,000 four-year-olds, and $360 million for early learning scholarships. This is what makes families, this is what families have been asking for. This is what we will support our youngest learners. Much like yourselves, families know that in order for other things that are important to us to work, like the economy, we need to invest in early learning opportunities. Early learning opportunities support working parents. They set children up for success in our K-12 systems, and they provide extra supports, such as early childhood special education services, when it matters the most. You'll hear from Assistant Commissioner Bobby Burnham the details of the early learning components of the Governor and Lieutenant Governor's budget, a budget that invests over $800 million in early education, early childhood education over the next 4 years. We have a great opportunity and a great obligation to make meaningful and impactful investments in our public education system, and that starts at birth. When families have the access and the resources they need, children thrive. I believe that's our shared goal, and I believe this budget is an incredible opportunity to take steps towards that goal. When we invest in our children, everyone benefits. I'm excited to continue work on carrying out Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan's Due North Education Plan and to work with all of you. And so I'd like to thank you for allowing me to be here this morning and share my thoughts. And with that, I will hand it over to Assistant Commissioner Burnham.
Commissioner, thank you so much for your testimony, and so good to have you on board. Looking forward to working with you. Assistant Commissioner Burnham, come on up, and you'll be walking us through some of the details, so please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Pinto, committee members. My name is Bobby Burnham, and I serve as the Assistant Commissioner over the Office of Teaching and Learning at the Department of Education. The Early Learning Service Division at the Department of Education provides leadership and monitors and supports the implementation of publicly funded early learning policies and programs. These programs include Head Start, Early Head Start, Voluntary Pre-K, School Readiness Plus, Early Childhood Special Education, Health and Developmental Screening, Early Learning Scholarships, Early Childhood Family Education, School Readiness, and an Early Childhood Assessment System. We have 7 budget proposals that will promote a strong early care and education system across the state in partnership with our cross-agency partners. The first proposal that we will cover today is the proposal around mixed delivery pre-kindergarten. This proposal aligns programming to create a more unified structure for eligible four-year-olds, both in terms of standards and requirements, but also in the provision of funding to build an IT infrastructure to align with the one-stop shop being built for licensed childcare providers and moves toward a shared payment system with the scholarship model and possibly CCAP as well. It supports and promotes family choice. It supports local level decision making related to mixed delivery for those eligible four-year-olds. Next slide. The eligibility requirements for the mixed delivery model align with other early childhood programs, including early learning scholarships. I won't go into each of these bullet points, but you can see that the eligibility for this mixed delivery targeted four-year-old model is quite extensive. It includes all children on IEPs and all American Indian children. And this eligibility is more comprehensive than the other even the scholarship model or other assistance programs with that inclusion of all children on IEPs and American Indian children. The program standards proposed will provide, as you have all probably seen these in recent years, a focus on play-based instruction aligned with our early childhood indicators of progress, and it also allows flexibility for at least 425 hours up to 850. So that provides for a full day program, as well as also provides the flexibility for those programs who still wish and have a need from feedback from parents to offer a partial day program. The ratio is 1:10 with a class size of 20. We will be using developmentally appropriate assessments. and employ lead teachers with a bachelor with a delayed implementation and clause to include those currently working in that capacity with a certain level experience. We are proposing this because mainly of the child care workforce shortages and all teacher workforce shortages that Minnesota is experiencing now. Next slide. It also involves parents in decision making. It involves an intentional process around working around with community-based partners as well as school-based partners for a smooth transition. Salary schedules will be equivalent to public school staff with comparable credentials and provide additional coordinated professional development, training, and coaching for all mixed delivery staff. It maintains a system as it, this mixed delivery system maintains systems as it currently operates and provides additional resources to plan, implementation of the new model, including maintaining the 4,000 school readiness seats, providing funding to support local level planning efforts, and it also provides coaching to increase quality and support for programs to meet these standards and builds a IT infrastructure to support the assessment, coaching, and fiscal management. Next slide. We will fund an estimated 25,000 seats for eligible four-year-olds by fiscal year 27, including 13,000 additional four-year-olds that are currently being served through VPK, SRP, and the Pathway to Scholarship programs. It includes resources for ongoing planning and coordination at the local level. It expands access to coaching for all programs in mixed delivery system in coordination with existing coaching occurring through Parent Aware, provides resources to maintain and make this IT infrastructure improvement, and provides resources to support grant and program administration, program monitoring, and ensures high quality programming. The Early Learning Scholarship expansion is another proposal. As Assistant Commissioner Bailey mentioned, the range of children we hope to serve is between 8,500 and up to potentially 9,000. This, of course, is dependent on how much each scholarship is awarded for and the type and setting of the program. Expands eligibility to birth to age 5 and will prioritize birth through age 3. Provides administrative funding for third-party administrators for outreach and engagement and management of the payment process to providers in each region. It also provides increased programmatic support. This is due to the increased volume and provides appropriate oversight and continuous quality improvements, and again, that IT infrastructure. A note on the Early Learning Scholarship proposal, we have policy proposals that are related to scholarships, including adding children of incarcerated parents to the priority group, and it also reduces the number of months that families have to identify a program in order to ensure that we're getting scholarships to those families and are able to use them to make an easier, the process easier to forecast. We have proposals around technical funding corrections that we have had on the table for a couple sessions now to ensure that our children who are English language learners and children who are receiving early childhood special education services also receive the same services that all other children receive around school breakfast. The next proposal is a proposal to increase early childhood health and developmental screening aid. This state aid is increasing The ask by 30% more closely aligns with the actual cost to districts. Currently, districts are spending more funds on health and developmental screening than they're currently reimbursed for, and that is because we don't have that amount of money in our allocation. The state aid for school districts to comprehensively screen young children for any developmental concern prior to kindergarten enrollment or shortly after enrolling in kindergarten or public learning programs is, as you know, a key to early identification and getting those kids services. It also financially incentivizes earlier screening to identify concerns as early as possible. And it provides capacity at the department. Right now we have a 0.50 early childhood screening person, and of course that person is overwhelmed, and so we hope to make that a full-time position. There is also a policy proposal regarding early childhood screening to move forward, and it includes the optional use of a parent report tool rather than a direct observation tool for those families who request a virtual option due to potential health concerns. We learned during COVID that this was a very viable option and proved to be effective and improved referral rates. Our next proposal is around Head Start use of state funds and our tribal set aside. We are requesting to allow our Head Start programs in the state to have more flexibility in their state funds to include support for infrastructure, administrative costs to increase their programming throughout the state. And we are also proposing a set percent to go to the tribal Head Start programs so that they are able to consistently plan year after year on a set amount of money for their programming. Our next proposals are focused on addressing the teacher shortage in early childhood education. In a 2021 state report, 92 school districts reported that they had zero licensed parent and family educators for their ECFE programs. In a 2022 state report, 46.4% of districts stated that staffing issues were a big challenge. So this proposal is to grant institutions of higher ed and offer tuition support for candidates going into the teacher education program. It will target individuals from rural communities as well as BIPOC students, and we hope to provide 40 students each year with this additional tuition support. And our Grow Your Own proposal for early childhood educators, we know staffing shortages are consistently highlighted as a significant challenge, not only for ECSE programs, but all early care and education programs. In our current Grow Your Own pilot, we received twice as many applications as we had funding to award. Head Start has used a similar type of model for years and has had great success. This proposal will expand the existing Grow Your Own programs to provide for credentials other than a license, which is important in the ECE field, as well as builds a pathway to licensure by moving teachers along the ladder. Those, Chair Pintos, are the proposals from the Department of Education.
Thank you so much, Assistant Commissioner, and thanks for all of your work. I know you oversee, your title is overseeing teaching and learning, is that correct?
Office of Teaching and
Office
Learning.
Of teaching and learning, yeah. But I know, I think of you as coming out of the early learning world, and so we kind of like to claim you, though I know you've got broader responsibilities, so thank you. So members, I think we are ready to move to member questions. Representative Lesnikar gets to go first. Maybe you can repeat your question, then we can see who can be the right person to try to answer it. I don't know that I heard necessarily Representative Lesnikar that was totally tied to the budget, but of course there's a lot in this budget, so we can probably find some kind of tie-in. So
right.
So please give it a try, and we'll see what we can do.
No, this is a significant investment, so I'm looking at it just from the standpoint of with a large system and this type of program growth and the current systems we have, if someone could just explain to me what our processes are to track child care, if we're giving the child care credit or whatever system it is, that it's also tying to workforce issues so that there's a tie-in to that the person's somewhere on payroll, you know, the nursing homes, assisted livings, child care centers need employees. I mean, there's so many places. So how is that double check system in place?
I wonder, Representative Lesnikar, if you're asking whether there's a verification that someone receiving, there's a requirement under the Child Care Assistance Program that the person be working.
Yes.
And so sort of what are the, how do we know that that's in fact the case, that somebody is in fact working? Is that?
Agreed, yes.
Okay, that's okay, good. I didn't want to mischaracterize your question, mm-hmm. but make it be helpful. Is there, I don't know if there's somebody you can sort of help with that at all. Ms. Sommerfeld was going to take a stab at helping anyway. Can please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Jennifer Sommerfeld with the Department of Human Services. Mr. Chair, Representative, our Office of Inspector General and our staff that has been working on this proposal is continuing to work on exactly what our plan is going to be long-term for tracking FTEs, the number of hours that they work. We do know that anybody who accepts a grant will be required to keep all of their payroll data for at least 6 years so that we are able to continually track where people are at.
I think, Ms. Sommerfeld, I think it's a slightly different question, though.
Oh, I'm sorry, you're answering. I thought that was
the question was about a person, I believe it was, about someone who is receiving child care assistance themselves, the individual.
Oh, I apologize. I thought we were on the...
Yeah, so there's a worker school requirement for CCAP. Mm-hmm. That's a requirement under CCAP. And so just sort of, I assume there's an attestation or something, and then they could be prosecuted if they're lying, but I don't, if you happen to know that.
I'm actually going to call down Ms. Pacine.
Okay. I think there's a slight misunderstanding about
the question. My apologies. We took the question a different way.
And Representative Lesnikar, if I'm misstating your question at all, you please.
No, thank you, Chair. And so I just wanted to know what the current system is.
Yep.
For tracking and accountability and if.
For the individual, to verify that the individual is supposed to be working or in school. So, Ms. Pacine, please identify yourself, and then you can take a stab at it.
Good morning. I am Lori Pacine. I'm the manager of the Child Care Assistance Program with the Department of Human Services. Members of the committee, Chair Pinto, for child care assistance, the programs are administered locally. The law requires verification of employment in school and schedules. So workers at the local level do verify all of those in writing, and our cases are audited monthly. So there are checks and balances between what workers do on their side at the local level, what the law requires, and then our audit system, which does track our level of compliance with that policy.
Representative Lesnikar, follow up.
So the tracking is with the recipient. There's not a tracking system with the employer.
You mean of the employer of the recipient. So if the person's working at McDonald's and
Correct.
They need child care. Yeah, Ms. Pacine, you can clarify that.
Yes. Representative and Chair Pinto, there are several ways that a recipient can provide verification, payroll, payroll records, letter from the employer. Those are the two most common methods of verification.
I could imagine, Representative Lesnikar, that maybe McDonald's or the employer might find it kind of burdensome for them themselves to be intervening in this way, as opposed to putting the burden on the employee to provide their W-2, provide their, you know, their pay stub, and provide a letter if the employer wants to do that, I assume is the case. Representative Lesnikar, will further?
No further questions. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, Ms. Pacine, thank you so much. It was really helpful.
Thank you.
Thanks. Representative Coulter, I think, is next on the list. Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. excuse me. First, just a couple of comments that I just want to join the chair in saying that I'm really excited by what the governor and lieutenant governor put forward. In particular, I think the mixed delivery proposal is really interesting and I think really innovative. I know there are a number of us on this committee who are parents of young children and it's always a bit of a challenge to kind of figure out how early care and education work for your kids and the way that works for you too. So I'm excited to see that move forward. And I did also want to highlight, and Chair Pinto knows, this is something that I've been really interested in, the creation of the Department of Children, Youth, and Families. I think that's going to be a benefit for a number of Minnesotans, and I think it's going to be a benefit for the state government to have this department move forward and sort of put all of these services in one place. And I think it's just going to serve everybody better. So I'm really, really excited to see that move forward. Just a couple of quick clarifying questions. The first, and I don't know if this is a question for Ms. Bailey or Ms. Hoganson. I thought I had read somewhere that the governor, Lieutenant Governor's proposal was to transition the early learning scholarships to only be 0 to 3. And now I'm seeing in this presentation that it's 0 to 5, but prioritizing 0 to 3. And it's entirely possible I just misread that, but just wanted to clarify what the story is there.
And Assistant Commissioner Burnham.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. Thank you. We are prioritizing 0 to 3, but we also know that parents would like to maintain that choice to attend whatever child care program they would like to. So that's why we left that 0 to 5 in there for those four-year-olds who may not choose one of our mixed delivery partner programs. So it's just purely to maintain that family and parental choice option. But we will definitely be shifting to prioritizing those birth to age 3 children.
Okay, thank you. That's a helpful. I'm sorry. That's a helpful clarification. Thank you. And then my second question, the 7% affordability standard for child care. I guess my question is, what are sort of the specific benchmarks around that? Is there a specific sort of date by which that is the goal to achieve? Are there sort of specific goals for the end of this biennium and next biennium and so on? Just kind of what is sort of the process around that? Goal, which I think is absolutely a good one.
And I think Ms. Hogan is going to answer that, and I'll ask you to identify yourself, but also perhaps you could just define for folks what the 7% affordability standard, what that phrase means, but then expand on that. So, yeah, please, Ms. Hoganson.
Sure. Representative Coulter, Mr. Chair, my name is Stephanie Hoganson. I'm the policy director with the Children's Cabinet. The 7% affordability standard is a national benchmark of affordability of child care for families. It's similar to what the Affordable Care Act did for affordability for health care, for some of you who are familiar. So 7% of family income is what would be expected to be paid under a system that is affordable to families. And that goes up to about, with the child care costs in Minnesota, that goes up to around $250,000 that families with two children would be able to meet that affordability standard. That's how high our costs are in the state. And
well, maybe know just for folks, right, that we know you have to be pretty wealthy, just as you're just saying, to not be absolutely slammed with early care and learning costs. We just know this from talking to constituents and others. So anyway, please continue.
Yeah. And the 2021 legislature established the Great Start for All Minnesota Children Task Force, which is just completing its work in the next couple of weeks and will submit its final report and draft or final report and implementation plan to this committee and other committees with jurisdiction over early childhood. And part of that legislation was for the task force to determine what an affordability standard in the state is and should be. And the task force members voted, there were 15 voting members, they voted to have that 7% affordability standard be the affordability standard for their plan. And the implementation timeline, I believe it's by 2031, but I can verify that with you. But all of that will be in the report that will be submitted to this committee by February 1st. And of course, that's a plan and a recommendation. And the governor and legislature will need to take action to implement.
And that report out on February 1st, you said, and we'll certainly be hearing that here. Representative Coulter, though, follow up?
That's the answer. Thank you so much.
Good, thank you. Representative Hicks.
Thank you so much, Chair, and thank you so much for being here today. I do want to just say I am so excited about a variety of things that are in this plan. For me, I am incredibly excited about the investment in our youth in foster care. I have personal experience, and I have a person in my life who I love dearly, who I call my child, who is in extended foster care right now. And we have had serious conversations about what happens from 21 to 22. The program that he's in isn't going to extend, and so we've had those conversations. So to see some of that investment in our extended foster care youth as we launch them so that they have the same support that other children who have that wraparound family support have, I just want to say thank you so much for that investment. And for, I know it's not a huge group of people, and sometimes they get forgotten, and so my mama heart says thank you. And then also I wanted to say thank you for CF60. I know a lot of mommies and aunties and grandmas and uncles who have stepped up and who have filled in those roles and have supported the little people that they love. And so to see that investment in those families is so powerful and so meaningful to me. And so I just wanted to extend my greatest thank you.
And I'll maybe note CF60 is the support after foster care and on the packet, and providing support for older youth, et cetera. And I share your excitement, Representative Hicks. We know that kids at that stage of life, in that circumstance, are some of the most vulnerable, the most exploited, and the most challenging circumstances. And boy, we want to make sure to take care of them. Other member questions or discussion at all? Representative Perez Vega.
Thank you, Chairman Pinto, and thank you for this presentation. It's really exciting to see the support that the state is really pushing for our early childhood learning and the VPK programming. As a mom to a soon-to-be preschooler, there's hope in this. And for her and her fellow classmates, soon-to-be classmates. So muchas gracias for focusing on the empowerment of early education. Thank you.
Good stuff. Thank you, Representative Perez Vega. And Representative Katiza Witun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks to all of you for being here today and for the great work that you're doing on behalf of Minnesota's children and families. I'm particularly looking forward to the good work that we can do together on the child tax credit and the child care expanded tax credit. And to Chair Gomez's point, when I presented the Great Start expanded child care credit earlier in taxes this week, her point is that we can't tax credit our way out of social issues. And so I think that is a point well taken. And so in combination with all the other proposals here, I think that this is a really amazing package to lift up our littlest Minnesotans and their families. So thanks so much.
Good. Other questions, discussion? Vice Chair Keeler, please.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, everyone, for the information. My question is regarding the higher ed portion of the education piece. I love higher ed, and I haven't been able to talk much about it because I'm not at that table anymore. So I'm going to go in, and I just want to kind of walk through what does it look like. I know it says that we're going to target individuals from greater Minnesota and BIPOC students, and we're going to be supporting 20 students and 40 students. We have communities that are at massive crisis level, different than other communities in Minnesota. My community feels like one of those. I mean, we have over 1,000 spots that are empty in our early child care centers. So my question is, how are we gonna make sure that we have some sort of fellowship or blend that if we're gonna support individuals through their higher education institution path, how do we make sure that when they're licensed, they're going to work in these communities that are high crisis need?
Assistant Commissioner Burnham, one. Yeah, please.
Representative Pinto, thank you for that question. It is an important question, and we are currently looking at multiple ways across multiple divisions how to address those problems, working in partnership with higher ed and with Pelsby. Recently, or over the last 2 years, MDE has implemented a mentoring program. We're working with our CTE or our career and college division to look at getting into high schools and promoting this profession starting early on and then supporting them through the process. We do acknowledge and recognize that much more needs to be done in that area. I can get you more detail on what is going on from the Department of Education's perspective, but we do share your concern and are addressing it, and I'd be happy to get you further information on how we are addressing it beyond those things I mentioned.
Yeah, I would appreciate that. I just have seen that in different areas that we lean on higher education to provide the degrees and the licensing, but then we aren't actually, we're working very siloed in the other areas that we actually need them to be staffed and to support those communities. So I just want to make sure from a greater Minnesota perspective, you know, it's hard for us to gain employment sometimes or people to look at our communities as spaces that people want to move in. So I just want to make sure that we're absolutely keeping us in mind. And this isn't a funnel, you know, for people to move to Minneapolis, St. Paul all the time, but that our communities are not getting overlooked in that placement piece. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Keeler.
Thank you.
Thank you, this is Commissioner. Representative Hemmingson Yeager.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to all the testifiers. As I was kind of listening and going through this presentation, I noticed a thread of IT investment and our systems and database investment, which I very much appreciate. We cannot look at trends. We cannot identify trends if we don't have good data. We can't get good data if we don't have good tools to collect the data. So very appreciative of that. And I also really appreciate how you're looking at a systems level to break everything down to how do we make this good for the user. I have not had to navigate things, but navigating systems and going here and there is very confusing and it doesn't make for an effective system. So I just want to thank you for kind of that thread throughout your proposals.
Thank you. I don't know if there's any comment anybody has about that. I think Representative Keeler has an IT related question to that. So we'll do that, Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Chair. My question was kind of, I was trying to figure out the same thing, right? Because like when systems don't talk to each other, it creates more paperwork, redundant time, we're not overly efficient. So, I mean, what is the investment of FTEs total that are going in to help streamline with technology?
And throughout these different proposals, yes.
Correct.
Okay, yeah, and that might be let's see. I know that we've got a couple different agencies here, so that may be a little bit challenging. But we can maybe get each agency. So we'll start with Assistant Commissioner Burnham. And
thank you,
okay, sure.
Chair Pinto. I don't have those figures in front of me for the MDE side of things, and I'm.
Let's see if Assistant Commissioner Brown has not focused on those.
But we will dig into that and get you that figure.
If you could, I mean, I will say, having worked in different parts of this space for a number of years, I found, you know, we often will say, oh, you know, we want to do X, we want to know Y, and often, yep, the computer systems we have cannot do those things. That feels like it's not something that many of us sort of want to focus on, and yet it's just so important. If you could provide that kind of follow-up information to us, that would be great, as you're able to. Any follow-up from you, Representative Keeler? No? Okay. Yeah, but that'd be very helpful. Anything else that that folks have, questions or comments or anything? I'll maybe ask, I guess I won't ask to change the presentation, but just members, just directing your attention to one of the early slides about, it says children at the center. I find myself diving into the details of these proposals, of course, and we need to do that. I should note, especially for folks who are new, the budget bills are going to take a little while to put together. And so that's something that we're going to need to, we'll get into those details. But just stepping back and looking at the overall picture, I'm really excited by this, by having the idea of children at the center. And I would encourage all of us not just to think about what's in this committee's jurisdiction, but as Representative Katiza Watoon alluded to, there are tax credits. There are proposals mentioning within the Department of Employment and Economic Development, which oversees a lot regarding child care. There's a lot out there, and the important thing is, in fact, to put kids at the center. Before I say anything further, though, I have the impression that Lee Daniels may have something that he wants to say or ask. Sir, please do that, if so.
Thank you, Chair. I just have one question. When will the details, when will the bill language be out so we can kind of go through that? I know you got a vague answer there, but any idea how many hours or days or?
Well, so Representative Daniels, so a couple things. So first, there are the budget pages available, which have quite a lot of detail. I know the revisor's office is very backed up. I'll maybe just say to every member of this committee, if you have a bill that does not, that you don't have to introduce, I might encourage you to consider not introducing it, because the revisor's office right now has so many bills. I've noticed there are members who have like 50 bills they've already introduced. Maybe they expect to get hearings on all those, and they want to advance those, and that's, you know, we're all, everybody has an election certificate, you can do what you want. But just to say, I know the revisor's office is extraordinarily backed up. I've certainly found I have things that I had requested a number of weeks ago and still waiting to get. So that is a real challenge, because there's just a limited number of folks there to produce those. So I suspect it's going to be a couple weeks. I don't know if anybody, well, maybe see if any of our staff is able to provide any information, but I don't think that's due to anything regarding our partners at the agencies. I think it's just that it's just the staff to work through to put these bills together. Does anybody, my nonpartisan staff are, yep, same thing. So Lee Daniels, it's certainly just as soon as we have those bills, going to be getting out there, yeah. So, Representative Daniels.
Just one last comment. I know there's more than 3,000 requests for bills. At this rate, will be about 15,000 for the biennium. And last biennium, there was just short of 5,000 bills. So my suggestion and hope is that before you request a bill being jacketed, ask around, see if somebody's already carried that bill. I am seeing the same bill carried by 5, 6, 7 people. So maybe you just kind of reach out to your friends and neighbors and staff and find out, you know, who's all got bills for this category or that category, and maybe we can reduce the workload for the poor revisors. I meet with them during the summer and fall. That's when they're available, I just can't imagine being in their shoes right now.
Well, members, I will note a note of bipartisan leadership and unanimity coming out from the leaders of these two caucuses on this committee to really urge that for folks to consider that because yes, it is there's a real crush there. So this is exciting. I'll say that there's so much more to do, and I think folks who know me, I'm going to be pushing just as hard as I can to make sure that every single child gets off to the great start that they deserve. This is a great start for that great start, and thank you so much to the testifiers and to all the administration for your incredibly hard work. So thank you. Now, members, don't go quite yet, because a reminder, we have a bit of business to accomplish. We have a set of minutes from January 12th that was corrected. You received a second copy. There was a typo that changed the bill number. Everybody should have that. Representative Keeler moves approval of the minutes from January 12th of 2023. Representative Katisa Watoon, yes, has a...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My last name is spelled wrong in a number of the minutes that we are going through. So I
see this. The
12th,
Y and...
The 17th and the 24th.
Yes, Representative Katisa Watoon, and actually I think three of the four I'm seeing your name is wrong. So we're gonna get that fixed. Thank you for noticing that. So that motion is to approve the January 12th minutes, the corrected copy, and then with the additional correction of Representative Katisa Watoon's last name. Are there any further additions or corrections to those minutes? Hearing none, all in favor of approval of the minutes of the January 12th meeting, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, that motion passes. Representative Keeler moves approval of the minutes for January 17th. With the correction to Representative Katisa Watoon's last name. Any further additions or corrections? Hearing none, all in favor of approval of the minutes from January 17th, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. That set of minutes is approved. Representative Keeler moves approval of the minutes from the hearing from January 19th. In that case, your name is spelled correctly, Representative Katisa Watoon. So no additions or corrections needed. From my side, but are there any additions or corrections from members? So hearing none, all in favor of approval of the minutes from January 19th, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. That's our third motion. Excellent. And finally, Representative Katisa Watoon moves approval of the minutes from January 24th? Yes, it is. Okay, my apologies. All right, got a little confused there. With the correction to Representative Katisa Watoon's last name, any further additions or corrections? Hearing none, all in favor of approval of the minutes from January 24th, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Four motions. Thank you all so much, and be in touch, and have a great rest of the week. This meeting is adjourned.